The voice of Husker Nation is on the air. This is Hail Varsity Radio. Insight, opinion, expertise, along with the biggest names talking Nebraska sports. Join in with the show at 402-489-1240 or 1-800-825-5865. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and Elijah Herbel.
Welcome to it. Great to be with you on a Thursday. It's Hail Varsity. We're powered by Cornhead Lager. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel. Hope you're doing all right. Lot to get to. Pretty busy day when you look at all that has gone on. Jackson Brockett's no-no. Just what the doctor ordered. Speaking of doctors, Rick Mast, a medical red shirt. We'll talk about that and just a fun conversation from the guys in the morning on Herd At Sports. Damon and Ravi with Matt Rhule today. We have some excerpts from that. We'll drop on you as well. Busy with Brandon Vogel from Counter Reed at 425. Check in with Vogues on all things Big Red in hour two. We'll stop by and check in with Gary Barnett and see what Barney thinks of the week of Prime, and also Dylan Raiola, his reaction to what he saw in the spring game. Jeremiah Searles back with us. Papa Searles will drop by, hit some NFL and Big Red topics at 525. Then the Pride of Chicago, Burke's Best Bet. Danny Burke, we'll see what Danny thinks about some NBA playoff action, as well as maybe some Kentucky Derby favorites, win, place, and show. Elijah, are you going to put a bet down or several for the Derby on Saturday? I've got the invite to Iowa Russ's Derby party on Saturday. The festivities start at 3, so I will need to pace myself. Saw Coach Brett last night as he celebrated the big 5-0 at a watering hole near the country club area. So did that, and hey, we're almost to the end of the week. So you doing all right?
Yeah, doing well. I have been conferring with our friend Will that you hear here locally.
Yes.
For the local listeners on KFOR. He plays the Derby game every single year.
He loves it.
Yeah, he's got some picks for me. I'll have to run them by Danny before I'm willing to lock myself into anything in particular. I don't think Will had Rich Strike a couple of years ago. Though he did think there was some potential, according to Will. He didn't pick Rich Strike is all I know. So I'm not sure how much I can trust somebody who doesn't get the biggest long shot in the history of the Kentucky Derby. That being said, though, I've been doing some conferring with Will. Will I lay down the action? No, I don't think so. There is quietly Nuggets to win the NBA championship futures bet that I've been sweating out. So I think I might just wait for that and let that be the only action I have at any given time. It's never a good idea. Maybe just for me, but never a good idea to have multiple bets going out there at the same time, because then you look at how much you could win. And you go, well, yeah, these are all guarantees. These are locks. Like, got an extra inter amount here to work with this month, and then they all end up miraculously not hitting, and you go, oh, I was looking at what I could win and not what I wagered, and that's never a good thing. So I think I'm just going to sweat out the one NBA championship bet on the Nuggets.
Well, we had a chance to talk with Matt Verzel earlier in the week, and he's always entertaining to hear from and guys, good takes on football. But the thing he said that was true with not only some of the teams he was a part of with winning championships at Nebraska, but you see it in championship programs. You hear about loyalty, and Matt Rhule will talk with the guys in the morning on Herd At Sports about loyalty. So that's great. But the greater discussion point is selflessness. And that is a cornerstone. That's what the cement's made of with this Nebraska culture that is going to either continue to be tough as nails and help move them forward with wins in fourth quarters. I mean, that the talent, the depth, the development, all that is on the right track. You're accumulating talent if you're Nebraska. You're putting together the right practice setup that's physical and tough, so you're not a soft football team on the lines of scrimmage. The mental part and going out with the physical and making plays is very important, and that's still a bit of work in progress where there's not that PTSD, oh no, here we go again moment, and it's spanned different head coaches and different programs, and does the bleeding finally stop with it? So we'll hear from Matt Rhule on a lot of those topics. Numbers to get in today at 489-1240, 489-1240. Could also try us out on the toll-free line. We'll see if that's fixed, 800-825-5865. Can email the show, chris@halevarsity.com. And make sure you watch the show and like and subscribe in the StreamYard, the Hale Varsity YouTube channel, where you can check us out. And also the Hale Varsity Radio Twitter feed at HVarsityRadio, at Herbal Essence for Elijah on Twitter, at Schmidt_radio for me, Chris Schmidt. And you, Grandpa, is in first, KG in second, Mr. Snitley, Jeff Snitley, third, part of the Boulder Peace Treaty. Jay is in, says good afternoon, Patrick in at five, Dion, our sixth man, the other Dave in at seven, Brian, eight, Anonymous, nine, Tuck in at 10, Matt here at Lucky 11. So all of you, appreciate you tuning in. Brennan from the Black Hills also is in the stream. Chris is here as well. So we'll dive in and get things rolling. So first and foremost, what a performance last night on the diamond by Jackson Brockett. First no-hitter for Nebraska since 1954. Let's just be excited, if you're a Nebraska baseball fan, that they got a midweek win against a team that is on that NCAA bubble. You get a win over a team from a Power 5 league in Kansas State. That's important. But the manner in which you did it, the way you bounced back, perfection, not quite. You had a couple of walks and an error. But my, oh, my, this is a shot in the arm. You really wasn't sure what you're going to get from Jackson. He's a guy that wasn't even part of the travel squad 2 weeks ago. It's a homegrown talent that really stepped up. And this performance can be a lifeline. It can be that morning cup of coffee you need, not only heading into Minnesota, but maybe the rest of the season. Elijah, you can really use this situation as a springboard because it was tough. You'd just come off the sweep of Creighton. How are you going to respond if you're Nebraska baseball? Offense did so, defense did so, but a homegrown talent in Jackson Brockett responded big time for you with a monumental and history-making performance.
Well, I was here. We were laying out some preseason important things for the Salt Dogs immediately following the show yesterday. Salt Dogs going to be playing here locally in just a couple of weeks. Our friend Connor Clark obviously going to be doing the play-by-play. So we're going through that meeting. We wrap up the meeting. I'm like, oh, better check and see what's going on Husker baseball. And I believe you and I had the exact same reaction because I called you after
Holy
the game.
Holy bleep.
It was a what the hell reaction. What the hell is going on at Haymarket Park right now? Jackson Brockett's a guy that threw five total innings all year long. I think it was five and a third all year long in six appearances. I mean, we were excited about him preseason, but it kind of became clear as the year went on, okay, this isn't an arm that they feel they can trust. Limited appearances, as you said, not even on the travel roster. Let's give him a shot in midweek, and what the hell is going on at Haymarket Park? Dude's got a no-hitter going through six. I was in the station. I was far enough away I could say it.
Don't talk about it out loud during the no-hitter. Quietly.
I feel like that's more of like a commentator's thing and a dugout thing and at the stadium. Whenever I'm sitting at home, I can say, or I should say at work, I can say, oh my God, what is going on? And that was the thought. For that, Jackson Brockett, a guy that's barely seen the mound this year, to be the first no-hitter since 1954, individual no-hitter, I should say, incredible. You got to tip your cap to the guy, and you kind of laid it out. The question of what kind of shot in the arm does this have to the team? The unfortunate side is you don't really have any opportunities for midweek moving forward. So it's not like this is going to be a revelation to your midweek. I believe it's just one left. But the shot in the arm it can give your team nonetheless to go throw a no-hitter. Let's lay it out. Kansas State, good baseball team. They have had some issues scoring runs this year. I mean, they're 26-18 overall, though. And in the Big 12, a good baseball conference, they're just under 500 at 10-11. They're a good baseball team. Again, it hasn't necessarily been the bats that have been the strength of their team this year, but that being said, it's still a hell of a feat to go and no-hit them. And the way in which Jackson Brockett went and did it with double-digit strikeouts, was throwing strikes all night, kept hitters off balance, was drawing soft contact. Like, that's the key to drawing soft contact, is go out there and throw strikes so whenever the batter steps in the batter's box, he's expecting almost every single pitch to be a strike and feels like he has to swing. That's how you generate soft contact. He was generating soft contact, a lot of ground balls. Once he got a little confidence working in the early innings, that was my phone dropping on the floor if you just heard the sound. Schmitty's looking around like he just dropped something. My phone just dropped like a brick onto the floor and derailed me from what I was thinking. But back to my point.
Soft contact, getting a killer performance and using that momentum.
And then you saw the confidence, you saw the momentum going as that game went on. Gets into the later innings, and it was the seventh inning where he strikes out the side. You just see the confidence, even though he's getting up there in the pitch count. Hell of a performance. You wonder how that's going to factor in for him with Nebraska's pitching struggles.
Well, you need another arm.
Exactly. Like is this something that he can personally turn into momentum for the rest of his season? It'd be huge to get an arm like him working as you look at postseason play. And then the team as a whole, what kind of shot in the arm does this give them?
KG just put it perfectly. Elijah's phone just made soft contact with the floor. Let's talk Rink Mast. Do you have a statement from Fred Hoiberg? Rink has put a lot into this decision, worked closely with our medical staff, and is looking at all the options to get his knee healthy. Rink must undergo surgery at the University of Nebraska. Coach Hoiberg announcing today that Rink Mast will undergo knee surgery, miss the entire 24-25 season. And he'll take a medical red shirt and return for the 25-26 season. Third team All-Big Ten performer, 12 a contest, 7.5 rebounds, 3 assists. But Rink was so instrumental. And what you have now is a little less certainty. You had a lot of folks exit for Nebraska. Not a lot of core guys, but some nice pieces. What did you add? You won't know till you know. And right now, Nebraska at least has Juan and Bryce back. You were hoping that Rink could come back and be that third part of your core three, but he's got to do what's best, and he's just waiting to get different medical opinions. He did that, and you just wonder, really, just how much guts Rink poured out there. I know they kind of managed him a little bit during the week practice-wise, and they needed to, but that guy left it out there every ball game for you on the floor and had some just monumental moments. His performance against Zach Edey for sure, and also what he did against Ohio State. But you want Rink to come back and be healthy, and he had a statement released as well. He put out on Instagram and Twitter about how much fun he had, and good on Rink finally having some closure with this from a health standpoint, and he can get fixed up and then be back for the Big Red a year from now. It's not good for Nebraska, but this is what it is. It's reality.
And as I look at it, the surgery happening now is to me, so a guy like Rink doesn't try to rush it back and make it back next year, is to preserve that medical red shirt so you are rehabbing through all of next season.
To be full strength.
I think if you are preserving that medical red shirt, this isn't a case of a guy using another year to get himself acclimated and then go off to Europe or the NBA. It completely strikes you as a guy that wants to use a year to rehab and get one more year of film out there to hopefully make a run at professional basketball here in the United States. That's how I read it. It also makes the transfer from Washington, Moy, makes that make a little bit more sense to me. Like, oh, you're going to get in the 7-footer? Because you had the guy in Morgan from North Dakota State that I thought was more of a Josiah Alec replacement, a little bit more refined than Josiah, maybe a little less athletic, but kind of fits that role a little bit better. And then you see 7-footer from Washington. Like, you feel like you had the center on Rink Mast. Does this mean Rink's going to leave? And then this comes out today, and you go, oh, he's got to have a knee surgery that's going to keep him on the shelf for a while. So you're going out and getting a 7-footer to be a more traditional, I think, big for you next year. I think the offense might run a little bit more through Morgan. Obviously, a lot of time between now and the start of the season for Hoiberg to figure out some of his rotations and figure out how he wants his team to operate. But it makes those two portal additions make more sense to me in my own mind, knowing Rink is not going to be a go next year, but he's also not leaving the program.
Well, Walter chimes in the stream about Roquan Buckley. And Shake Shack was his nickname, and Roquan's a guy that gave her hell on the defensive line, moved over to the offensive line, And it's a situation where you just wonder how many snaps. Roquan's been at Nebraska a long time. A kid out of Michigan that Nebraska recruited. Past staff. You love his attitude and effort. And we'll hear from Matt Rhule coming up specifically with Chief Borders, right? The topic of loyalty. And we'll have that a little bit more from Coach Rhule with his interview this morning with Herd at Sports with Damon and Ravi. So we'll have plenty of that here this hour, some of it next hour. All thoughts on Dion and this week with Coach Barnett, and Searles also weighs in. But a lot of things covered. The topic of loyalty from Matt Rhule, expectations, Harburg, the incremental build, and also just the intensity that exists day in, day out at Nebraska in their program, and how they want to go and where they want to be and why it is that intensity dial cranked up to 10. And it's trying to prepare you for those intense moments. Brandon Vogel will join us from Counter Reed. Great to be with you on a Thursday. It's Hail Varsity. We're powered by Cornhead Lager.
Hail Varsity Radio is live. Now, back to Schmitty.
Schmitty's a great guy, but he don't have a brain.
And Elijah.
You want me to speak?
I'm not pointing you yet.
On Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you. It's Hail Varsity. We're powered by Cornhead Lager. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel. We're going to see if Vogues pops in here. Some question here on the portal and has it actually closed. And I think Mitch Sherman from The Athletic laid it out perfectly earlier in the week with this. Just a paperwork process. Guys can be in the portal. And takes a little bit of time for the paperwork to clear. Matthew chimes in on the stream, Hail Varsity YouTube channel. What do you guys think of the idea that Dion is attacking players on Twitter as a scare tactic to keep guys from transferring? Kids are so scared of their image on social media, it might work. I don't think it's
I think it's about Dion trying to protect his own image. I think he's seeing these stories out here, and he's trying to defend himself, and this is how he sees fit to defend himself is, man, I run these guys off because they're terrible, not because I'm a bad person. It's because it's a high-pressure job, and these guys are just bad. That's how I see it personally.
My job's to win. They aren't good. We're going to bring in someone who's better. We're going to bring in Louis. That's it. But I don't think Matthew's off with this image concern. I mean, there is an image consciousness for sure, and too much. Eric also checks in as he's driving from Nashville to Lincoln. Good for you. Good to have you checked in. We appreciate that. He's asking for a free spot in the Haymarket to chill, even though there's no free shout-outs. Brandon Vogel with us from Counter Reed, counterreed.com. We can throw a free shout-out. Vogues, we're going to give you the green light or the red light on a free shout-out Thursday. With Eric's question here in the stream on where we should recommend he go when it comes to the Haymarket. You know the Haymarket well. Good to have you in.
And considering it's going to visit his nieces for a wedding in Lincoln this weekend, good chill restaurant. I'm not sure if we're talking 21 and up or minor friendly, so that is something I don't know whenever we're giving these recommendations. A nice chill spot, downtown restaurant, food. I'm not sure about drinks, but
Vogues, anything that comes to your mind? I someday want Vogues' food truck to roll up across from PBA or the stadium.
Yeah, it's actually, now that you mention it, it's been a minute since I've been to Lincoln proper, more than a minute. So, but my default would always be, it's tough to beat the atmosphere at the mill for me. That's a very baseline thing. Like, depending on what you're looking for, we're just talking about coffee there, but yep. That kind of became the go-to like meeting place if I needed to meet somebody in downtown.
Sure.
Lincoln.
It's a good meeting spot.
What about
from a restaurant? I think you can go Laszlo's.
Oh, Laszlo's is a classic. If you're trying to pig out, there's Rodizio down there with all the meats you can handle. The single barrel as well, if you're looking for something a little on the nicer end, if you want to get yourself a nice
steak. I think you got to do the single barrel, not just on a Friday or a Thursday or a Saturday. We highly recommend. Now, and get the carnivore tray as well.
Now, I am seeing it's a Thursday night. Could be rail 30. Could be brass rail time. Nice chill spot.
He wants restaurant. He wants restaurant, not Bellotto.
Nice chill spot to go hang with the family.
Vogues, let's get into some football here. And interested to kind of gauge what you think of Nebraska and the portal offseason. You've lost a handful of guys, not a ton of folks, but it's not a prime situation. There has been assistance. There's been best interest of the player. There's been phone calls made, all of the above, by Matt Rhule to get his guys, if they're going to a different landing spot, their best situation.
Yeah, I think so far it's pretty remarkable. Like, this is the plan they're trying to execute. I feel like you're swimming a little bit upstream in this era of the portal where it's still new and, you know, players feel like they have this option, which, you know, 30,000 foot view, I feel like they should have had sooner, just personally. But like, nothing beats continuity. I mean, when we look at, and I'm working on opponent previews right now for Nebraska's first four games on the schedule. Like, we look at returning production and experience, and those are important factors when you're trying to assess a team in the offseason. Like, as Matt Rhule put it, I think in December or January, like, we have our own portal in terms of keeping guys like an Isaac Gifford or Ty Robinson. And that was all fine and good when you made it through the first one, but you figured after spring football, there'd probably be some additional exits. And, you know, graduate transfers can transfer at any time. There still might be for Nebraska. But for the most part, like, they're kind of throwing a pretty strong, complete game so far in terms of, like, no, we're trying to create a culture where people want to be. And for the most part, people have elected to stay there. And, you know, you can weigh that however you want in terms of, is that better than going out and being really active in the portal and just adding immense amounts of talent? I think it is. I think in the long run, this approach, maintaining your team, is more valuable than the best portal additions year after year.
It's Brandon Vogel with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. And Brandon, do you think we'll see a return to that among the landscape of college football as a whole? Because you look at what's going down, like Washington had a real influx of transfer portal talent when Kalen DeBoer took over. You look at Colorado, and I know they haven't been the best example, but that's the way they want to go. It seems to be the standard, not the exception now, that whenever a coach takes over at a job, you're going to go to the portal. You're going to try to supplement some talent because everyone wants to win now. What does that mean to you, the uniqueness of Nebraska doing it this way? And do you think that Nebraska could be the light in terms of the return to what is normal in college football, that it's about recruiting, developing, and retaining, as opposed to going out and trying to find talent in the portal and letting some of the guys near the bottom of the roster go in the portal?
Yeah, I don't know if Nebraska does this and it's successful. I don't know if it'll be, you know, a sort of guide for other teams that are out there. Maybe it will be, but I think a lot of it's kind of situation dependent. And I think at a place like Nebraska, you really, like, Lane Kiffin, you know, more so than Colorado, like, Colorado has just had extreme numbers, so they're the easiest one to point to. Ole Miss has been really, really active in the portal. Lane Kiffin calls himself the portal king. And they've, you know, been able to add some really good players that way. I kind of view it as, like, that's a strategy maybe like 5 to 10 teams can execute on a year-over-year basis. Something like Nebraska, you know, if it can do what it wants to do, or Iowa would be a good example of, like, being like, yeah, we'll look in the portal and we'll add where it makes sense. But for the most part, we want to keep guys that are here. That might be reserved for, you know, 5 to 10 to 15 teams. And then everybody else is going to fall somewhere in the middle. And what do you do in the middle? I just, unless you're at the start of a coaching tenure, I have a hard time seeing a massive, like, roster overhaul year after year after year working out. So it'll be interesting, and teams will always be at different stages of what they need, like how much they're losing, if they've got a new coaching staff. But I think for the most part, like what Nebraska is trying to execute as kind of the opposite of those teams that are really, really into the portal is almost as hard to do as what those teams who are going out there and be like, yeah, we're going to replenish our roster every year. And that's how we're doing it.
They're trying to create certainty, right, in an uncertain world. And
I like that.
Then develop what is there. And this was out of the World Herald. I think Sam McEwen wrote it, but he talked about the topic of homegrown quarterbacks. We touched on it briefly. And you look at some of the schools pre-portal era or even during the portal era, they were able to stockpile, is the best word, a couple of quarterbacks, maybe not even in the same class, but they are able to transition, right? They're able to transition and have about a 3 to 5, in some cases, 7-year window like Bama and Clemson did with some really, really good quarterbacks. With Nebraska, and if things pop for Raiola, you have Kalen, you have Harbaugh, you have options now, but if you can keep that band together, what kind of signal does it send to future high-level quarterbacks?
I mean, I think it has the potential. I mean, the fact that they had, you know, a relatively open competition that is still technically open until they name a starter, you know, it tells you that you're going to get that. And I think this coaching staff, like, it's easy for any coach to say that. It's harder to actually live that. But I feel like this staff has to this point of being like, hey, you come here, you're going to get a fair shot. So I think that piece is appealing. But also, like, if either of those two guys stay, if we assume that Raiola is kind of Nebraska's starter this year and potentially beyond that, I think it tells you something. And this is kind of my takeaway from the lack of departure so far. There's really something here of it's a place that guys want to be. Even if, like, you could go into the portal potentially, well, anybody can go into the portal, and just in the pursuit of more playing time. And sometimes that's the right decision for guys, mm-hmm. but it's saying that there's something else to that decision. There's something else that's factoring in here, the fewer transfers that Nebraska has.
Brandon, before we get you out of here, as we are running up against a hard break here, we have a question in the chat. It comes from KG. Is it me, or does Vogel look like Stanley Tucci?
I've always thought that.
And you, Grandpa, chimes in. Bet you've never seen Tucci and Vogel in the same room together.
Let me take off my hat, and that'll even add to it, I suppose. I'll take that.
Have you ever gone as Stanley Tucci for Halloween?
No, it's been too long. Like, the last time I dressed up for Halloween, I don't think I knew who Stanley Tucci was.
Stanley didn't know who he was. Now,
if I need to now, and I might, given that I have kids now and, you know, they're going to be into the Halloween thing, it's good to have that in my back pocket. Though I can't imagine, you know, a 3 or 4 year old is going to be... KG's got it right. That's the way to go. If I'm going to go with Stanley Tucci, I'm going to go with Stanley Tucci in the Hunger Games.
I think
that's elaborate.
I think you go as the doctor in Captain America.
Oh, that could work too.
Okay.
I do like the thought here of everyone who's listening on the radio who's never actually seen Vogel before. They only listen on the radio. Now knows exactly what he looks like through the mental imaging here that we've done. If you wonder what Vogel looks like, think of Stanley Tucci. You're sure. Pretty dang close.
Vogues, we'll check.
Now you never need to hop into the stream just to see what I look like.
I'm going to keep you for 2 minutes. 2 minutes more from Vogues, or AKA Stanley Tucci.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Thanks for spending time. It's Hail Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal. A couple more minutes with Brandon Vogel. Vogues, I know you've been working on opponent previews. We'll get the latest in Camp Dion in about 25 minutes from Coach Barnett. What's happening with you and opponent previews? And give us a little insight to Counter Reed with you and Aaron Sorensen here. How can folks get signed up?
newsletter for subscribers from myself and Aaron Sorensen. We do a couple of free things each week that are mixed in there to give people a taste of what we're doing. So for tomorrow, I'm going to bite off the first one third of Nebraska's schedule. So this will be a 4-4-4 scenario. So tomorrow I'm looking at kind of what we learned about UTEP, Colorado, Northern Iowa, excuse me, and Illinois through spring football. I've always kind of liked this time of year to do that sort of stuff. And so we'll jump in with those four next week. We'll probably hit the next four, the middle stretch, which gets super interesting. And then the last four, which becomes make or break time, I think, for Nebraska if this season goes as expected. So that's kind of what people can expect for the next couple of weeks.
Without spoiling what's coming here the next couple of weeks, a lot of people this week have been shoveling dirt on the grave of Colorado based on some of the things we've seen on social media. From a numbers perspective, returning production, do you caution those people? Is there something to that? Is that just them believing what they want to believe? Again, without spoiling the preview, what's your take on Colorado? How dangerous can they be?
Colorado, like last year, is kind of almost unhandicappable to a degree because there's just so much turnover, and it's unlike anything we've ever seen. So a lot of like the traditional tools that I would use to assess a team don't work here. That said, I'll tease this, something I wrote for tomorrow. Like the only thing I feel certain about with Colorado football at this point is that they definitely engineer enough drama to merit the like round the clock content that they churn out from their in-house team. So that's nice. Like it would be terrible if Colorado was boring and they were putting out all this content. So there's that piece of it. Long-term, you know, last year I was pretty intrigued by what Colorado was trying to do. At this point, just personally, I'm pretty skeptical that it's going to work over any long stretch of time. That said, they bring in some good athletes. They've got Shedeur Sanders back, who was a really good quarterback in his first year of FBS football and probably will be better in 2024. So I think they've got a chance to beat anyone, almost anybody that they play. That said, like their preseason win total from Vegas is 5.5. And that feels about right to me. There's so many variables with a team like that. Whereas, you know, to compare it to Nebraska's approach, which we were talking about in the first segment with the portal, their approach is to try and reduce variables, which I think is the winning strategy long term.
Vogues, we'll check in Saturday, bud. Thanks for spending some time with us today.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
All right. There he is, Brandon Vogel, with us from Counter Reed. We'll have more thoughts on Dion. How about some thoughts from Matt Rhule as he joined Herd At Sports, Damon and Ravi, this morning, and the topic of loyalty. And this is from Matt Rhule this morning on Herd At Sports, Cut 3.
When I mentioned loyalty, loyalty comes in all different shapes. Like Chief Borders left us. Chief was loyal. Chief stayed through the spring. He graduated. He did a tremendous job. You know, as he left my office, he was like, man, because he knows my daughter. He's her favorite player. He was like, tell my sister I love her. Like, he's doing the next step in his life. He's not quitting us. He's moving to the next thing. There's some guys, you know, that might come in and just leave you for more money and you're not planning on it. Chief did everything right. He played the spring game, played his heart out in the spring game. So he showed loyalty. Thomas shows loyalty. And that's why I think we have a chance to be a pretty good team, because those players are bringing that.
When it comes to that loyal mentality, do you go find it? Do you recruit it? Do you develop it? And Rhule was posed that question, Cut 4.
When I got here, there was a lot of it here. Mm. So that's a credit to the previous staff. It's a credit to Scott and Nikki and all those guys. There was a lot of those types of guys here. And I think what happens in recruiting is sometimes you get so tempted to go chase, you know, the talent only, that you bypass a lot of this. You talk yourself out of it. Oh, we'll get him to do this and we'll get him to do that. You have to, in my mind, put enough players that are wired this way in the locker room that it becomes the norm. That if you're not like, you know, I say all the time, you know, functional people look dysfunctional to dysfunctional people. Like dysfunctional people look at normal people and say, what's wrong with that guy?
Yeah.
And yeah. So, you know, you put enough functional people, and I didn't quite appreciate the volume of the roster when I got here. You know, I was used to having 105, 110, 115 guys. You could really, and that's not that I didn't love them. I was a walk-on. You could really pour into. What I found is if you put enough Grant Taggies and, you know, Cooper Hausmans and Isaac Dickies and on and on and on, guys not on scholarship in the locker room who bleed Nebraska and who bleed hard work, it just carries over to everybody else. Like Vincent Shavers showed up, and his lifting partner was Isaac Dickey. And the jumps that Vincent made in the offseason were due to him, but were also due to Isaac. And Isaac, you know, hey, this is how we do this. This is how we're doing it. And they became great friends. So I think putting the right people in the locker room and being at Nebraska, you're surrounded by the right people.
The rub-off part of things, right, Elijah? Where do you have guys that have a standard and an expectation and high level of give a crap, and they show how it's supposed to go, and they do it every day, and you fall in line or you don't. But there's kind of that giant neon sign when you get in the building.
And I kind of find that quote interesting. Functional people look dysfunctional, the dysfunctional people. And I want to get your take if I'm reading this the right way. Like, if I interchange, like, high achievers look dysfunctional to low-achieving people. Is that kind of what he's getting at here, that the work that you have to put in to make it at Nebraska is unique and is going to make you look weird and no one's going to get it?
Unless
they are also one of those other high-achieving, sure, highly driven people.
It's birds of a feather, right? Mm-hmm. You want a bird... Birds of a feather that are so consumed by winning, by working, and then performing. Can we squeeze in that pressure topic, thriving in the moment? Are we out of time?
Up against it.
Okay. We'll get that in here. Topic of thriving in the moment, because that's honestly what a lot of this build is about. It's yes about talent, yes about character, but it's really about performance in crunch time, because that is the life of Big Ten football, and that Big Ten life has gotten a lot more difficult with four really good teams on top of teams you're trying to run down or get to the level of, let alone the teams that just won the national championship or have been to the college football playoff. So more from Matt Rhule and his conversation this morning on Herd at Sports. Great to be with you on a Thursday. 15 minutes away from Coach Barnett from Colorado. Hail Varsity, we're powered by Cornhead Lager.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time this hour, Hail Varsity, we're powered by Cornhead Lager. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, hope you're doing all right on a Thursday. Spotify, iTunes, Google Play is where you go to get the podcast. Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, and the Hail Varsity YouTube channel. You want to catch the full Matt Rhule interview, catch out Herd at Sports with Damon and Ravi as well. Reminder about your friends at Herd at Sports Bar and Grill, the La Vista location in Omaha. And there's still time for you to be providing relief to those affected by the tornado through tomorrow, 11 to 7, tonight and to tomorrow, 7 p.m., collecting hygiene items, clothing, non-perishable foods, and that's all donated to the Heartland Hope and Project Intentional for distribution. So many of you have already popped by Herd at Sports Bar and Grill in La Vista. You're awesome. Thank you much for doing it. You still have time to do so if you feel inclined. Can also donate $10 to the American Red Cross. Text Red Cross in all caps, 90999. Let's get back to Matt Rhule from this morning. And we talked about the topic of loyalty, Elijah. You get into some other things, and last season's always an interesting animal to me, the psyche part. Can Nebraska thrive in the moment? Rhule talked about, when it comes to war, a soldier hearing bombs far off in the distance or bombs going off right next to him and surviving it? How do you handle that? The expectation moving forward here, that theory, and how does Nebraska move forward here with high expectations?
Wait, do you want to cut five or six?
Six.
Okay.
The expectation and expectation theory, like, hey, when you, and this is really what affects our guys. Mm. Like that analogy that you're talking, bringing up is exactly what happened to us last year. So when the bombs are going off in the distance and you can hear them, you keep waiting for them to come closer to you, and it's that expectation that leaves you with trauma. You know, when's it my time? When's it coming? When you're walking down the street and the bomb goes off right next to you, and then another bomb goes off right next to you. You realize that every day is a gift, and you're, you know, hey, you almost become, elated, like, hey, I can't be hurt. I'm meant to live. You've been through the worst, and so I think for our players, they've proven they've had all those bombs go off around them, where it's like, hey, I can come back from adversity. I can handle it.
A little bit more from Rule, or did we have to cut it short?
What you want, five?
Yes.
We're out of time now.
Okay.
Second straight segment. We've run out of time next, for top five.
Next hour, we'll have more from Matt Rule. Next hour, excited to check in with Gary Barnett, his thoughts on Coach Prime, his thoughts on Dylan Raiola, and also what's happening with this revenue sharing in college football. Jeremiah Searles, former Husker, longtime NFLer, NFL agent, get Searles' take on some college football, specifically the Big Red, and that next season that, I don't know about you, but can't get here soon enough, already missing football now that we're less than a week removed from spring football. So Searles checks in. We'll get your NBA playoff thoughts from Danny Burke, Pride of Chicago, Burke's Best Bet, NBA thoughts on not only over-unders, but maybe some props. Maybe even a little Kentucky Derby love from Danny Burke. That's next hour. Stay with us. It's Hail Varsity. We're powered by Cornhead Lager.
The voice of Husker Nation is on the air. This is Hail Varsity Radio. Insight, opinion, expertise, along with the biggest names talking Nebraska sports. Join in with the show at 402-489-1240 or 1-800-825-5865. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and Elijah Herbel.
Hail Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager, Hall of Fame coach with Colorado and Northwestern, Gary Barnett, back with us. Coach, you survived the spring game. How are you?
Well, ours was pretty short, Chris. We went 57 minutes, and it was, we saw a lot of quarterbacks. I think Shedeur Sanders threw it 14 times, but it was so wet, and it's just a miserable day. And we still had a pretty good attendance, considering they sold 27,000 tickets, and I think we probably had 7,000 people there. But they had to call it off a little bit, and with good reason, because it just never got better. But it signifies the end of the spring, mm-hmm. and the opening of the portal. But I think overall, I think they made some improvement in the offensive line through the portal and recruiting. And but we still have a lot of unanswered questions in the defensive line and new defense. So it seems like it's just constantly changing, and we have a whole new set of coaches. And so it's I don't know how to describe it. It's nothing steady, that's for sure.
Gary Barnett with this coach. We'll get your thoughts on some of Nebraska in a moment. What's your reaction to, the best way I can describe it is, some of the Buff drama this week? You had the Athletic story come out. You had some exchanges between Xavier Smith and Shedeur. Coach Prime has responded and engaged back to criticism. And there are some folks that say, okay, I mean, this is who Deion is, upfront and honest, and said from the get-go, some of you guys can't make it here. Others believe it's come across as heartless and cold, my words. And I'm wondering your view in your time in college football and, of course, time around Boulder. What do you think of the week of publicity right now around CU football?
Well, the only time that could happen is in this day and age. This would not have happened 5 years ago.
Right.
One, because all the changes and the way of doing business it was completely different 5 years ago than it is now. And I think that it's become common practice and almost accepted practice to put all your stuff out there and, you know, fire back and do that kind of stuff. I'm not used to that. I'm not used to seeing it. I'm not, as a lot of people probably my age or even younger than that, look at it. It just seems so adverse to what we have known college football to be. And now, one thing, because of all the coverage, and two, because of you know, Deion just attracts attention, good and bad. He's just, you know, like a lightning rod to some extent, more so than any other coach I've seen through the years. So part of it is his nature and the way he's viewed. Part of it is the situation and that things have changed so much in college football. And that, so as I look at it, it's a little bit hard for me to take and understand, but I'm trying to observe it from a really neutral standpoint and non-judgmental.
Sure.
But it's, you know, it weighs on you. And, you know, we were just talking that somehow it came across on a news feed that Nebraska had called off their spring game in the middle of it because of two injuries to starters. And what's true anymore? You know,
no kidding.
I don't know how you figure it. I don't know how you separate it all out. So it's crazy, but there's certainly, he is a lightning rod, and he does attract a lot of people's attention. And he also, you know, he does his share of putting the lightning back out, because he certainly isn't shy about discussing things.
Do you worry about Colorado's attractiveness right now, or is it still kids want to line up to come play for Deion?
I think there are certain kids that want to line up. There's a certain element in the population that will want, you know, that likes this, that thinks it's all cool. But there's a larger group of people who have a different philosophy about this sort of thing. And I think you're going to continue to attract the people who want to be around Deion. I think people who are thinking maybe they take a chance and try it are going to be less likely to do that. Mm.
Coach, Nebraska didn't cancel their spring game. It did suffer a couple of injuries. Starting quarterback, probably 4 to 6 weeks, and a really talented wide receiver that's young. But Nebraska had a lot of recruits on campus, a handful of 5 and 4 stars. We're talking big wide receivers. Nebraska threw 61 pass attempts. Harburg looked like a different quarterback, and again, against non-starters or a lot of non-starters, so it was set up for success. But they still went executed. So the work that Harburg's done, he looks like a much better, different thrower, motion, and just confidence. Dylan Raiola was incredible, 16-22. Just all the throws, all the different levels, beautiful 64-yarder. I mean, he looks just different, and the hype train's left the station already, but it's getting downhill. There's so much excitement with Raiola nationally and locally.
As a coach, take me through managing expectations for a freshman phenom. You know there's going to be bumps in the roads, but man, there's a lot of talent. You can do a lot with it early, and things could get better quicker.
Well, I think a combination of the young man's background and the coaching in his family, you don't get to that level for the most part through a family of former players without understanding really everything's about the next step and about what you do and how you handle it. You don't get all caught up in the hype of it. You realize that it's, you know, you're dependent upon five offensive linemen. You're dependent upon the ability of receivers. You're depending upon a lot of different things. And that's the beauty of football is there's so many different positions and you're dependent on each one of them, not only in each play, but as the year goes on. So my guess is his head will be fine. I think they'll progress nicely. I mean, you've got a coach that's been through all this, mm-hmm. and he's got a staff of guys who have been through all this before, and they'll navigate this just fine. They really will.
I want to ask you, and you've been around a lot of quarterbacks, and you know coaches, and you look at a handful of programs. We talked about this yesterday that have been quarterback hubs, okay? You look at what USC or where Lincoln Riley has been. He has had really good quarterbacks at both spots. They've gone on to be high draft picks. Ohio State has had a run of first-round guys, and Stroud looked great as a rookie. Texas looks to be kind of on the up-and-up with Ewers, and then you figure Arch Manning waiting in the wings. McCarthy came in as a freshman. You landed that difference maker at quarterback, and then, of course, Bama under Nick. They've had a run of guys that were really talented and then stepped up. Talk to me a little bit about the homegrown quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, as well, and getting it right. What's a trait? There's talent, yeah, but just the whole makeup. How do you get that can't miss? That's what I'm wondering about. And Nebraska feels like it's on that path of getting a guy that could be special.
Well, they're hoping that for sure. Mm-hmm. It's lightning in a bottle to some extent. Chris, I think that once you have one, though, it attracts others, and people look at it and say they've got the model down, they know how to do it, they know what it takes, and so they use that in recruiting to attract another one. Rail may be exactly that for Nebraska, and is, you know, the last great Nebraska quarterbacks were all option quarterbacks for the most part, but football was different then than it is now, and but they were known for their option quarterbacks and how efficient they were. And you got to be a little bit lucky. You got to keep the same people around, same staff around, same quarterback coach for the most part. Head coach has got to have a feel for that. He's got to have coached quarterbacks, I think, and to have understood them. So it's it takes a family. A village, in a better phrase, to mm-hmm. do that. And then once you get one, then everybody assumes you have the roadmap to doing it again.
So did you know you had that in Hagen? And did you think you could have had that in Frazier?
You just hope
okay. You
do. Because, you just don't know how things are going to go. And, of course, coaching now with the portal, you may have him, but for how long are you going to have him?
Sure.
And that's, that's a completely different scenario now than we ever had before. We knew we were going to have Darian to develop, and how soon would he develop? We didn't know. But we know that over the 3 or 4 years we were going to have him, that he was going to be a good quarterback if he could stay healthy, and that's always the key. And I think we saw Tommy Frazier is the same way. But they don't all develop. They don't all turn into that great player. Now, Tommy did, and certainly Darian did. But Darian, the biggest surprise with Darian is how quick he learned things. Hmm. I mean, he was a genius in the athletic sense of what he saw on film and what he saw on the field and how he could react to it.
Coach, let's talk about revenue sharing and the SEC and the Big Ten. I know it's got to be sold to the presidents and universities, but what's your feel from the story earlier in the week out with CBS and, of course, ESPN, that that's the next path? I know we've talked about it a little bit, but do you think it accelerates here?
Yeah, I do. I think it does. I think the story this morning that broke about the Bulls hoping that a CBA would guarantee fewer opt-outs, would, you know, that they could create ways to make more players play in bowl games. And so a CBA, collective bargaining agreement, is the only way to maybe get that done. So, yeah, I think it's all moving pretty fast right now, Chris.
Any feel on Florida State and Clemson? How does that shake out? Can they get funding to get out of these contracts? What's your feel moving forward?
I know legally they don't have anything to stand on, but that doesn't mean anything. I mean, if they want out bad enough, somebody's going to arbitrate a move. Somebody's going to, you know, they're going to negotiate something. It's going to cost them, but my guess is you can't keep them in there.
Last thought on the NFL draft. Gary Barnett with us, Hall of Fame coach, Colorado and Northwestern. The draft went to script with the exception of Penix going real high to Atlanta. I love Alt getting picked by Harbaugh. That's a total Jimbo pick. And McCarthy ends in Minnesota. What'd you think of the quarterback landing spots? Anything that makes you smile? Knicks in Denver, Penix in Atlanta. How do you think things proceed here?
I wasn't totally surprised that Penix went that early. I think he's been a little underrated, personally, in the draft. Not underrated as a player in college, but in the draft potential. The rest of it, I think, went pretty well. Knicks is the big question mark, I think. Can he get better? Is he going to be a guy that can continue to grow and get better? He's pretty darn good right now, but how does that translate to the next level? But I think he's a good pick for Denver. They need settling down, and I think he's kind of a guy that'll do that. Mm-hmm. But I do think Penix is going to be a good player. And the rest of it, I think, went pretty well, what we thought. I mean, what was there, 23 offensive players in the first 32 picks?
Yeah, I mean, it took like till pick 14 or 15 before a defender went.
Yeah, and they were edge players and corners.
Right.
And so it just shows you where the game's going.
It is. Coach, you have a great weekend. This was fun to chat. Thanks for giving us a few minutes.
All right, Chris, great being with you.
Good to hear from head coach Gary Barnett, Hail Varsity Radio, powered by Cornhead Lager. We'll check in with Jeremiah Searles shortly, but good perspective on that IT quarterback and what it can do from a perception standpoint for your program. And, yeah, he had some thoughts on Dion. And right now, it's just the best way he put it is it's different. And it is, and it's – we'll see if they crumble or prove everybody wrong, as it's been a mess in Boulder. Native Coloradoan, Husker standout Jeremiah Searles next.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back into it at Hail Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager, Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, and Papa Searles with us, Jeremiah Searles, our favorite Husker NFLer / agent at Searles71_HSKR. Searles, draft is done, spring game is done, and it starts all over, man. How you doing?
Doing well. Doing really well. Yeah, this weekend ended up really well for us. You know, we ended up having 4 for 4, had a 6th-round pick to the Saints, and then signed 3 other priority free agent deals, one to the Rams, one to the Titans, one to the Browns. So added some new shirts to the collection with some new teams, but really excited. Everyone has a home, and the draft is very stressful, and I'm glad it's only once a year, but, you know, time to start pushing the rock back up the hill, right back on the recruiting train.
So no time to kick the feet up and crack a beer?
I took 2 days. I took Monday and Tuesday to kind of regroup and relax and, you know, just feed a couple phone calls here and there. But it took it 2 days. And then you start thinking like, man, there's probably someone else out there recruiting already. I should probably get back on this again.
What mentality do you have to have? What is necessary to make a squad, practice squad, or roster as an undrafted free agent? There's some benefits. It's always better to be drafted, but there's benefits too to choose where you can go. But you lived it, man. You did a great career by working your tail off.
Yeah, you know, and the thing I tell all these undrafted guys, you know, the thing I tell all these undrafted guys is you have to not look at the big picture too quickly. Right? Like you can't walk in and be like, okay, how do I become the starter? Right? You have to paint the target on one guy. Right? I have to be better than him. Right? And then once I'm better than him and taking more reps than him, okay, now I got to be better than him. Right? And cause that's the only way you can do it. If you start trying to look at it from too big of a perspective of I'm going to beat out our left tackle who's making $85 million this year because that's what I am, then you can lose sight of the little things. Right? And also as an undrafted guy, you can't afford a bad day. But you don't. You're not going to get as many chances as the drafted guys. It's just the nature of the business. They don't have as much money invested in you. And if they think you can't do it, they'll just find someone else who can. Right. So you have to go into it with this mindset of I'm going to be perfect every single day to the best of my ability. And also, I'm just going to take it one day at a time and say, I got to be better than that right tackle today. Or I have to make sure I don't make any mistakes. And if I do, I have to make sure I never make them again. Right. You just have to be hyper aware of all those things, because when you're an undrafted guy, the dream can be over in a day. One single day. I mean, I have a story where the guy I went into San Diego with was a free agent for Boston College. We had rookie mini camp. He didn't have a very good rookie mini camp. The next day, we're squatting together. He goes to take a poop, and I'm waiting for him. Dude never comes back. All of a sudden, I go back to my hotel room. There's a note like, hey, Jeremiah, Ian here. They released me. Thanks for everything. And in walks a kid from the tryout portion of the rookie mini camp. He's like, hey, where's Ian? I was like, you're the new Ian, right? And within a matter of 3 days, the dream was over for him. He never got back in the NFL, right? And so it can just happen so quickly. So you just have to be very thankful for where you're at and then just work your tail off every single day.
It's funny, Searles. You're saying some things. There was a great piece. One of my favorite things that Will Compton's ever done was he wrote a letter to the gritty undrafted NFL players. I think it was called 1,400 words of urine and vinegar. That's what we'll say here. And some of the things he laid out. Shut up and lay low. Study your balls off. Do your rookie duties. Game film, game film, game film. And then one of the last ones, which I really like, is laugh about everyone saying to get to know the special teams coach, but get to know the special teams coach. Are all these things fair pieces of advice that you've given some of your undrafted guys?
100%. If you're not an O-lineman, the special teams coach is your absolute best friend, right? Because you're battling for spots 51, 52, and 53 on the roster. You know who they're going to look to? The special teams guy. Be like, who can play all four core? Right. Well, this guy can. Sweet. What position he plays? Who cares? Put him on here. Right. Like all those things matter. And the staying low, keep head down and stay low is the big one. You know, I've seen undrafted guys that come in and start trying to run with the big dogs. Right. They think, hey, I'm going to hang out with all the guys that are making millions. And I'm going to be that guy. You're not that guy, pal. Like, that's not what you need to be. You need to focus on the other things, because guess who's watching that? The coaches. Right. The coaches are seeing who's just happy to be here. Right. Who's happy to live the lifestyle. Right. Are you happy because you're in the NFL? Or are you going to grind to stay in the NFL?
Searles, let's spend a minute on that grind with your alma mater. And I think that is a fair personality trait with Matt Rhule and his kids and his coaching staff. And what do you think of the spring game and just this spring process? Because you've got a little more hype and a lot more hope with Raiola, but you also have, I think, a workmanlike mentality also attached to a lot of these high-star guys.
Yeah, you know, I remember going to practice last spring and seeing the beginning of the culture that he was going to set. And then I remember going to practice this year for spring and seeing the implementation of the culture that has been built. And the swing in 365 days has been really impressive, right? The people that are bought in, the accountability towards each other, the lack of mistakes at practice, the nonsense not being knocked off at practice. And again, this isn't a shot at Coach Frost, but, you know, he came in here and Coach Rhule said, we're starting from the ground up. And he really, truly did. And you're seeing guys buy into that. And when you see that and you see guys brought in, and then you see the talent that he's brought in with guys like Raiola and even Danny Kalen and, you know, Isaiah Neyor, like there's those these guys now that are coming in here that are just phenomenal with what they want to do. And just to see Coach Rhule instill that is going to go a long way, because you win games in October and November with just gritty, gutted out performances, right? When it's blowing wind and it's cold and no one wants to be in East Lansing on a Saturday night at 7 p.m., right? The toughest team will survive. And that's the instillment of the culture that Coach Rhule's put in. And I'm just excited to see where this team can go with it.
Are you optimistic with what you saw from the offense, knowing what the spring game is, and just where's your imagination gone with, all right, pairing it with what's expected to be a really good defense?
Yeah, you know, the spring game's hard to judge. You watch it and you're like, well, none of our guys really played, right? The guys we're used to seeing in the fall. I mean, very little Ty Robinson, very little Nash Hutmaker, very no Bryce Benhart, no Ben Scott, right? Like, there's some guys out there where you're like, okay, I get the point. I get the point of this, but it's hard for me to be like, ooh, and ah over a spring game. Now, did Raiola drop some really good passes? Yeah. Does he look like a miniature Patrick Mahomes? Yes. Right. Not saying he is Patrick Mahomes, but just the way he moves and his mannerisms. And if he starts doing the little finger thing here pretty soon, I'm going to lose it. Right. But like, it's just fun to see arguably the best arm talent Nebraska's had in the last 20 years. Natural, true arm talent. I'm not saying best quarterback. I'm saying natural, most God-given arm talent. In the last 20 years, the potential's through the roof for him. And so the excitement is very well warranted there. But there's still a lot of other pieces that have to come into play here. Who's going to be in the main running back room, right? We didn't see Gabe Irvin. We didn't see Ramir Johnson. Emmett's starting to look like a guy. But there's so many more moving pieces that before we can look and say, what's the final product going to be when you roll the ball out there on September? It gives me hope, but I'm still healthily pessimistic.
Searles, you want to get your take on Colorado, Deion, and the saga that's been this week on social media, the Athletic article, and the player treatment. It's one thing to be coached hard and not be coddled, and there's also an element of today's athlete/young person and how they handle or can't handle being talked to.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, is it surprising? No. Like, did we expect this out of Prime? Yes. But to see it written and then to see some of the other CU guys come out and be like, I think even his son was like, I don't even remember you. It's like, okay, now we're just being ridiculous. Right. But that's part of his stick. Right? That's part of his stick. That's part of his I am Deion, come play for me, and we're always going to be in the news and you're going to be relevant and this, that, and the other thing. But it has to be about the ball. And I think that's his biggest issue right now, is when you lost the games last year and didn't have the season, like you already saw it. CU sold out their spring game last year, and this year they're kind of like, we'll send some people, right? The stick wears off if you don't win games. That's just ask PJ Fleck rowing the boat up in Minnesota. Eventually people start to turn on you. And Deion, being the personality that he is, unless he can start putting games together and winning and having winning seasons, that stick's only going to last him so much longer.
Searles, what DEFCON do you reach if Nebraska loses to Colorado this year? I know that rivalry, you being a Colorado kid, I know it means a little bit more to you. What is the DEFCON for you if Nebraska can't get it done against Coach Prime?
I mean, if we can't get it done, Coach Prime in Memorial Stadium, we're at DEFCON 1, boys. Like, we're dropping it. We're being batting
no
the hatches.
No pressure.
Yeah, batting the hatches, load up the subs. We're going for it, because no, that can't happen. It just can't happen. Not in our building.
Moving forward, as we wind down, Jeremiah Searles with us, Hail Varsity Radio at Searles71_HSKR. With this schedule ahead, you know, where do you think Nebraska could be as they head into Ohio State? I mean, are you looking at a great start, the momentum that Nebraska's really not had forever?
I want to say yes, but everything in my heart tells me no.
So right? There'll be like a toe stub somewhere?
I just feel like we're not at the point of a full team yet, that we don't know how to win games in a row yet. And I've probably said this on this show before, but one of the greatest quotes I've ever heard was from Mike Zimmer when he was talking to us about how to become a champion. right? He said, first, you have to learn how to practice. Once you learn how to practice, then you learn how to win. Once you learn how to win, then you learn how to handle winning. Then you can become a champion. We're still learning in the how to win phase, right? Like, we're still learning how to win consistently. And until we do that, I think there's going to be times where we may rattle off two or three in a row. But then have we learned how to handle the winning, handle the success? Hey, we're feeling pretty good about ourselves. And then whack, right in the face. That just comes with the growth of being a young team under a new head coach.
Did you guys have trouble handling the winning?
Yeah. In 2016, we started 5-0. We started 5-0 in 2016. The end of the year, I think 8-3 or 3-8, right? So it's a tough thing to handle. Handle success is hard.
Even in your era at Nebraska, though?
Yeah, I mean, we always had one or two games. I can remember Purdue came in, I think, in 2012, and we barely, we beat them by like 21, but we should have blown them out by 50, right? Or South Dakota State, right? South Dakota State came in 2012 or 2010 on homecoming, and if it wasn't for Alfonso Dennard picking them off the end zone, we'd probably lose that football game, right? It's really easy when you're winning to think, I don't have to keep changing anything, right? When you lose, you always are like, okay, I have to change something. I got to go back to the drawing board. I got to study harder. I got to do this. But when you're winning, you can fall into complacency. And if you fall into complacency, you're dead. Like, you might, because that other team is hungrier. And all it takes is they come out, punch you in the mouth, and then you're reeling the rest of the game. And maybe you get lucky because you have talent. Maybe you don't. But it's a tough thing to handle the consistency of winning. It's why you see guys like Alabama almost loses to USF. Right, there's always one or two of those teams a year that challenge the big dogs just because they catch them sleeping.
Is there any impact of a guy like, say, MJ Sherman on this roster being a guy who played at Georgia? Can that help the locker room? Is this something that can only be learned through doing it?
It's only learned through doing it, right? Because it's all 11 guys. It's all 11 guys on each side of the ball. You can have a guy say it all the live long day, but until you've lived it, you don't actually know what it feels like.
Searles, we'll check in again soon. Thanks for making time, bud.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys. Go Big Red.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Big thanks to Jeremiah Searles and Gary Barnett. It is Danny Burke time, burksbeat.com, and podcast, and also blog for all the picks you like. Pride of Chicago, at Danny Burke 5. How are we doing, Danny? Good to see you. Put the golf clubs down.
Doing good, guys. Yeah, always solid over here. Getting better with this weather, more golfing opportunities. So can't complain, and happy to see that you guys made it out, safe of everything happening your way. I know you went through some rough patches, but glad to hear that you guys evaded it out there in Lincoln. So happy to be back on with you.
Appreciate you, man.
Danny, really fast here as we transition over to sports. I see you're rocking the Masters hat. Tell me, did you drop a G on that? Is that bootleg? Where'd you get that thing? It's pretty snazzy.
You got it in Augusta.
No,
it's Danny
it.
Burke.
I what's that, Schmidt?
He got it at Augusta. He's Danny Bleepin' Burke.
Well, he may have won it in a bet for all
that's
we
right.
know.
No, it is an
he owns Augusta
ad,
now.
I had a buddy who went down this year. He was able to go to one of the practice rounds, and I was like, man, if you could just do me a favor and at least snag a hat for me, please. And he came through, so shout out to him. And, figured I'd rep it, like I said, getting a little bit more golf in the atmosphere here. So we're getting pumped, but no, it's a great hat. I was elated when he got it for me. And that's the thing about Augusta. I mean, the pro shop, when they give away all that apparel, it's not insanely expensive because they make so much from people coming in, and they're going to sell it out regardless and obviously make their money elsewhere too. So I did not have to drop a dime on it, but a little bit cheaper than that. But hey, probably would have paid just as much because of how cool it is.
I might have to go hit the resale market and see if I can find a hat like that. Not to completely steal Danny's
no,
bag,
I think,
but I'm loving that hat.
We were making fun of Junior going all cowboy for the country show earlier this week. Elijah's going to show up in a quarter zip with the Augusta flag and lid, and it's like he's lived the life down at Augusta.
A fake Rolex.
Right? And you know how to tell the fake, right? With the second hand?
No. Oh, well, one goes smooth and one clicks?
Yes.
Yeah.
One's on the street corner in Washington, D.C., ones that are friends at Sauter Havens.
Right.
So
no, the key, you just, can I see your Rolex? No, it's mine.
Why is your wrist purple? Anywho, Danny, talk to me here. Kentucky Derby, NBA playoffs. What do you like this weekend?
Well, I'll be upfront about the Kentucky Derby. I don't think I've literally ever won on betting the Kentucky Derby. So I'm just going to follow a couple guys leading up into the race and throw a dart and hope for the best. I always watch it, but again, I don't really invest too much time handicapping it because I'm not really betting on the ponies unless I'm at the event, barring watching the Kentucky Derby. So TBD on the ponies. Otherwise, tonight, I've got to play for the Knicks and Sixers game. I'm looking at the total tonight, guys, and it's a lower one as it has been primarily in all of these games throughout this first round series between Philadelphia and New York. I went over 201. Now, I know it's fluctuating between about 201, 201 and a half to 202 and a half, but we have seen some steam come in on the over, and the over's actually hit in 4 out of 5 games. No, that's not why I'm blindly betting it or something like that once again, but I think based on what we've seen statistically speaking, we're due to get it over this total once again. They're averaging 213 and a half points per contest. Yes, it only went over in the last game because it went to overtime. But you look at this Knicks offense, and over the course of the last two games, they've been abysmal from deep. They've shot under 28% in both of those affairs. So I'm expecting and hoping that they can be a tad bit more efficient from three-point territory. Furthermore, what you also saw that was kind of odd, during the regular season, they were shooting 78% from the free throw line, which are great numbers per se, but it's really dwindled throughout the last three games. It's been under 69% in all three for New York. So again, we're expecting for free shots from the free throw line that the Knicks can step it up in that regard. Speaking of free throws, Philadelphia is a team that's averaging a lot more attempts back at home, and that's to be expected. You have the home crowd behind you. You tend to get more whistles in your favor. They averaged 22.3 free throws made going into this series. And then in the fifth meeting, they only had 19 attempts, over 26 and a half leading up into that. But then at home, it's 31 free throw attempts. On the road, it's just down to 21. So I think you're going to get contributions from the free throw line from both sides, even more so from Philly. And the Sixers have been really lighting it up from beyond the arc. I mean, they're shooting about 37%, about a percentage point higher than the regular season. And last game, or pardon me, two games ago, game four, the one that stayed under, they were horrid from beyond the arc. They're going to get back into their rhythm, feeling more comfortable with the momentum at home, probably going to be in that mid-30 to, you know, upper 30s range. And I think all that's going to lead to a more efficient ball game on both sides offensively. And it's not like I'm expecting them to light it up, but because this total is so low, because we expect these defenses to step up, which they will from time to time, I still think it's okay to take advantage of that. So if you get a 202 or lower, I think it's a good look toward the over tonight.
I will say, Danny, I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, but you look at it, it's game six. It's the Knicks and the Sixers.
Yep.
The NBA stands to make a lot more money with game seven at the Garden on one hand, and on the other hand, Scott Foster's earned the reputation of being the series extender for a reason. Who's the ref in tonight's game but Scott Foster? I look at the 76ers money line. I'm not going to call it free money, but there's a lot of factors that would point to this thing going to seven at the Garden, and I would be all for that. So I'm not going to put my money where my mouth is, but I like the Sixers tonight.
Hey, I can't say I disagree with you. I still think the Knicks end up on top. And, you know, with that being said, with Scott Foster and how profitable it'll be to get the Knicks in a game seven, you know, aside from that, I still think Philly probably is the right side. We're seeing the spread at about 3 in the money line, at about minus -150 or so, right around there. Because it's such a narrow spread, you're probably going to get a better number with the Sixers. And because I'm already invested in the total, I don't simultaneously want to put down some money on the Sixers just yet, so I have to root against the Knicks making some shots. I know a lot of people can stand to do that. I'm not one of them. So I'm going to go with what I have more conviction with pre-flop, which would be the total. Probably wait till the second half to see if we can get a solid number with the Sixers, because I do think they win this game and we see a game seven. Whether or not that's because of Scott Foster, so be it. But I can't say I disagree with you, Elijah.
Danny Burke with us here on Hail Varsity Radio, burksbeat.com. Check the website out, the podcast at Danny Burke 5 on Twitter. Do you like anything in game with Indy and Milwaukee?
So looking at this spot, I was really teetering with a couple props, but the guy who I really narrowed it down to was Pascal Siakam, and not with his points, but with his assists. So 3.5 I saw pretty much across the board, and you wouldn't think to make a wager on Pascal Siakam with his assists, but if you look at his potential assist number, it's as high as 7.2, and he's averaging about 4.5 assists per game this series. Now, the strategy after the first couple games where he just completely dominated, if he's getting the ball down low, you want to surround him with the defenders if you're Milwaukee, kind of set up a little bit of a trap or a double team, and thus leading him to potentially getting his teammates better scoring opportunities since he draws the defense in so much. So there is a little bit of method to the madness there. I haven't bet it. If you want a prop to kind of play around with, that would be one I would consider. Otherwise, for this game, I get that Damian Lillard's back in the mix, but it doesn't really entice me to take the points with Milwaukee, knowing you could have got 8.5. Now it's down to 5.5. I would strongly lean toward the Pacers still. You mentioned in-game, though, Schmitty. Again, I mean, this Pacers defense is volatile as they come. Realistically, you'll get a better number on them in the first quarter. Look for a cheap in price on the Pacers. That's how I'll handicap that.
Danny,
one.
Quickly, I've checked with our friend Will Wilson. He says Forever Young is the horse to ride with on Sunday. So.
Ooh, all right. Do we know what the odds are right now?
Danny, no idea. Hang tight. Hang tight. I need some Minnesota and Denver thoughts.
You got it.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time, make sure you get the podcast, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play with Hail Varsity Radio. Like and subscribe, Hail Varsity YouTube channel as well. Can watch the show that way. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, Danny Burke from BurkesBeat.com, and the podcast and website. Reminder to get buckled up. Use your seatbelt. It saves lives. It prevents injuries only if properly worn. Make it click. A message from the NDOT Highway Safety Office. Elijah, you've done some derby research. Danny Burke is with us. Bet the Ponies Saturday, most exciting 2 minutes in sports, right? Two and a half minutes in sports. Be at Iowa Russ's derby party on his deck, assuming there's no rain. And it'll be a good time for this weekend. We might have to have our derby picks again, but Danny will...
Well, quickly, let me just say, as you said, I've been doing the research. Forever Young, I believe, if I understand my horse terms enough, is the cousin of the favorite, Sierra Leone. It's a Japanese horse. Japan 0-4 in the Derby thus far, but they've been getting closer every single year. More of a stalking-type horse, kind of lays low, middle of the pack, hits that final kick, undefeated as it stands, currently sitting at 10-1. That's my realistic pick. And then if I'm just going fun... My favorite name, I think that may be Grand Mo the First at 50-1.
Okay. All right. Hey, the Japanese horses do. I like it. I'll throw a little bit on there, Elijah. We got to get a show victory here at some point, right?
There's no prop bet on how many horses die by Monday, is there?
I believe euthanized.
Not that I've seen. You got to get that in the offshore markets, I think.
Well, I mean, come on. That's what sucked about the Derby last year is – Well, there's another one that didn't make it. It sucks because horses are cool.
Euthanized is the term.
Okay.
It's out of mercy, they say. So they say. Uh-huh. Well, Danny, to Minnesota, Denver we go.
They say, here, Mr. Ed, take this needle so you run faster.
There's a great video of the horse doctor.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
if horse doctors are like normal people doctors, and they're like, oh, so what are you going to do about this ACL? Death. Bullet to the brain. You have a cough? Oh. Death.
So bad.
Let me show you something out back real quick. It's just going to take a second.
It's a shotgun.
Yeah, right.
Danny, to Minnesota and Denver we go.
Yes, we segue.
I need to be the professional here as Schmitty dies in the other room. Not literally. Minnesota and Denver. Game one is in Denver tomorrow night. Looks like 8:30 is the likely tip-off time. Sorry, Saturday night, I should say. What do you like in this series? As Nikola Jokic, big fan of horses, we're going to stay away from that.
It just keeps coming back full circle. First off, as I kind of try to, help transition us in that direction, apologies for talking as if the Bucks and Pacers game hadn't started yet. I didn't realize that an even earlier tip-off tonight, so that's my bad. Siakam does have 2 assists, though, so not that I'm celebrating anything. It's not fair to say that and then look back and he has it. But, yeah, so that game already started. My apologies. Looks like Pacers are already up 10, so potentially we don't get that live betting angle. Nevertheless, Elijah's Nuggets taking on the Timberwolves. It seemed like everybody was fading the Timberwolves in the first round. I couldn't believe it. It seemed like we were getting a Kevin Durant text. I was all in on Minnesota. I think they're going to give the Nuggets a big run for their money. Not quite sure I'm going to handicap it, but I am strongly considering, without having done anything quite yet, the series to go over 5.5 games. Know you got to lay a little price here, but I do think this one goes deep. But the home court advantage is massive for your Nuggets, Elijah, and I think they'll pull it out. But it's going to be a gritty series without a doubt.
Danny, we'll check in next week. Thanks for the time, bud.
You bet, guys. Take care.
A Huda Media Production.